Well, we've heard tonight about the disturbing experience of Pastor Daniel Scott in Australia. Could the same thing happen in the UK? Well, I want first of all to explain the main features of the proposed new offence, and then to deal with some of the dangers that it poses for free speech and for freedom of religion. Unfortunately, as we'll see, there's a real risk that we could be following the same path as the state of Victoria. Well, this is now the government's third attempt to legislate on incitement to religious hatred. The first two were knocked back. The Anti-Terrorism Crime Security Act was blocked, proposals in that. And then earlier in this year, 2005, before the election, proposals similarly in the Serious Organised Crime and Police Act were blocked. The same thing has come back a third time, this time with a different title, but it's the same proposal, and it's contained in the Racial and Religious Hatred Bill. Well, what is it that's proposed? If the bill's passed, it will become an offence punishable by 7 years imprisonment to use words or behaviour that are threatening, abusive or insulting, and which are intended or are likely to stir up religious hatred. This offence will apply to a range of existing public order offences under the Public Order Act 1986. So it will apply, for example, to words and behaviour, but also to printed words, to plays, recordings and broadcasts, to possessing material of this kind with a view to publication as well. I want to take a closer look at the elements of the new offence. As we'll see, there are two of them, what we can call the content element and then what we can call the effect element. Let's look at the content part first of all. The words, behaviour, written material, recordings or so on must be threatening, abusive or insulting. Now that sounds as though it's fairly strong protection for free speech. But the interpretation the courts give to those words is much weaker than the government admits, as legal precedents show. In 2003, Harry Hammond, an elderly evangelical street preacher, was convicted for the public order offence of using insulting words or behaviour. His crime was to display a sign in Bournemouth on the street stating, "Stop immorality, stop homosexuality, stop lesbianism," as well as "Jesus is Lord." A hostile crowd of some 30 or 40 people formed around him. Some of them threatened violence. After some debate, the police officers present decided to arrest Mr. Hammond and not the crowd. The Bournemouth magistrates convicted him of displaying an insulting sign. The High Court, when his case went there, refused to intervene. Now, the case turned on the court's reluctance to interfere with the magistrate's ruling, but nevertheless, it sets a dangerous precedent. It makes clear that the first limb of this offence, which also, you'll notice, refers to insulting words or behaviour, is very easily satisfied. In other public order prosecutions, the courts have also made clear that words can be insulting or abusive, despite the fact that they're true or have a foundation of fact. A government minister made this very point in debates in the Commons in July, referring to the Court of Appeal's 1995 decision in the case of Birdwood, a parallel prosecution for incitement to racial hatred. So, for example, accurately quoting the sacred texts of one's own or another's religion, as Daniel Scott has found to do, could in some circumstances be treated by the courts as being threatening, insulting or abusive. I'm not scaremongering here. In the UK, in December 1999, the Independent Television Commission found that the use of a quotation from the Book of Leviticus, taken from the King James Version of the Bible, was, I quote, offensive to public opinion under the broadcasting codes. So much then for the first limb of the offence, the content limb, which turns out not to be much of a hurdle. Now, what about the second limb, the effects limb? Well, the bill says that the material has to be intended or likely to stir up religious hatred. What it doesn't do is to require proof of intention. It's enough to prove that your words were likely to be heard by someone in whom they were likely to stir up religious hatred, and that you're aware that the words might be regarded as insulting. In practice, it will nearly always be the likelihood that's charged. The reason for that is that it will be easier for the prosecution to show than intention. The double likelihood test is difficult to understand, but it means that it's not necessary to show that anyone actually heard the words, nor that any hatred resulted from it. You can still be convicted. In all cases, the surrounding circumstances must be considered. What is acceptable in a group of co-religionists might not be amongst a cross-section of the public or before a different group. However, as the experience of Daniel Scott shows, one cannot make assumptions about the audience, and words given to one audience may be reported or republished elsewhere. Now, what does hatred mean? Well, according to the bill, religious hatred means hatred against a group of persons defined by reference to religious belief or lack of religious belief. It therefore includes hatred against humanists, atheists, and agnostics. However, the question of whether particular words are likely to cause hatred will be for a jury to determine without further advice. The Home Office has said that we need not be worried. Hatred, they say, is a strong term relating to an extreme emotion. The offence will not criminalise material that stirs up prejudice, ridicule, dislike, contempt or anger, or which simply causes offence. However, the Oxford English Dictionary defines hatred in this way: intense dislike or enmity. In the Commons debates on the bill, Paul Goggins, a junior Home Office minister, conceded that this was a dictionary definition, but argued that the courts would somehow apply a stricter test. That's optimistic. In Daniel Scott's case, the judge found that he had incited hatred, although the Australian law goes a lot wider than that as well, but he had incited hatred because the judge defined hatred in this way: intense dislike, detestation. In Britain, the Norwood case shows how easy also it may be to infer motivation based on religious hatred from a very few words or images. In Norwood's case, the High Court ruled that the defendant had been correctly convicted of religiously aggravated display of threatening or abusive or insulting sign when he put up a poster stating "Islam out of Britain and protect British people" against the background of a picture showing the destruction of the Twin Towers. As well as that, though, there's a very obvious grey area in this offence. There's no definition here of religion. The government has chosen to leave this whole question to the courts. Now, there's no problem, of course, about mainstream religions, but the door is also open to new religions and cults to call for the offence to be used to protect them. Satanists have already complained repeatedly and successfully to the broadcasting regulators about the condemnation by Premier Radio of their practices. One can easily imagine Scientologists, the Unification Church, proponents of female genital mutilation or of child exorcism, calling for prosecutions when their beliefs also are criticised in strong terms. It's likely that they'll all fall under the protection of the new offence. Incitement of hatred of all religion is treated the same, including presumably tribal witchcraft, animal sacrifice, ancestor worship, and even, well, why not, sex engaging in child sacrifice. So bearing all that in mind then, are religious activities protected in any way from prosecution? The short answer is no. The government's view is that the right to engage in free and vigorous debate and in some forms of proselytism, evangelism, will be unaffected. In other words, it's implicit, though, that some forms of evangelism may fall under the offence. There's no automatic protection for services of worship, unlike the equivalent Dutch law, or for the use of sacred texts. The former Home Secretary, David Blunkett, said this: "In extreme circumstances, it is, for example, possible to quote or misquote passages of sacred texts out of context, so that they become threatening, abusive, or insulting, and intended or likely to stir up hatred. Such activities would rightly be caught by the scope of the offence." The government claims that it will not be an offence to proselytise one's own religion, or to urge followers of different religion to cease practising theirs. For example, Christians claiming that Jesus Christ is the only way, the truth, and the life, or Muslims exhorting people to submit to the will of Allah, or in fact, as atheists, claiming that there is no God. However, again, this is not a protected activity in itself. It will depend on the language and the context. Is it acceptable, for example, to mention eternal damnation for those who don't put their trust in Christ as Lord and Saviour? It's certainly threatening and can often be taken as insulting, certainly of the moral state of the person concerned. If other religions are depicted not merely as incorrect, but, for example, as demonic, could that not be taken to stir up hatred against them? If this is right, then evangelists may risk prosecution in some circumstances, or at least we can say, as Humphrey reminded us earlier on, that expression may be chilled. Now, are there any safeguards for free speech and for freedom of religion in the bill? Well, the government have repeatedly pointed to two things, the prosecution policy and the Attorney General's consent. First, let me say positively, it will not be possible for groups privately to bring their own prosecutions. That's certainly an improvement, I think, on the position in Australia. The consent of the Attorney General will first be necessary. The government intends to issue guidance on prosecutions. Application of the law, however, is likely to vary considerably according to the attitude of particular police forces in their area. And I think we can readily imagine that some will be much more vigilant in enforcing political correctness than others will be. The second safeguard is the Attorney General's consent. Ultimately, the decision on whether to prosecute or not is for the law officers, government ministers. Now, this will mean that a politician is making a political judgment on what should come before the courts, and inevitably he will come under acute pressure, perhaps from religious groups on both sides of a dispute. Even if few cases are brought in practice, the mere presence of the law will create an expectation amongst religious groups, and if these are disappointed, additional frustrations. Had the law been in existence at the time, there would have been calls to use it against Salman Rushdie and his publishers for publication of satanic verses, against the distributors of The Passion of Christ for its alleged anti-Semitism, by Sikhs against the play Bezti, and by Christians against the BBC over the screening of Jerry Springer, the opera. It's unlikely, however, that the Attorney General would have consented to prosecution in any of these cases. So what just has been gained by all of this? Finally, is this law necessary? Well, the government argues that it will close an important loophole. The existing offence of incitement to religious as a racial hatred under the Public Order Act 1986 covers some, but not all, religious groups. For example, Jews and Sikhs are covered under the offence, but not multi-ethnic groups, such as Muslims, Rastafarians, or Christians. And there is some evidence from the police that racists cloak their attacks on British Asians as attacks on Islam. However, the government downplay the fact that steps have already been taken to close this gap, this loophole, if you like. One of the changes already introduced was one made in 2001 in the Anti-Terrorism Act. This creates the concept of religiously aggravated crime. When this is combined with existing public order offences, it's capable already of penalising inflammatory religious speech. In fact, there have already been several successful prosecutions for this offence. The case of Norwood, that I referred to early on, was just such a prosecution. This fact alone undermines the government's argument that a further offence is now needed to plug the gap. In the same way, similar laws have already been successfully used against so-called preachers of hate. For example, in February 2003, a Jamaican-born convert to Islam, Sheikh Abdullah El Faisal, was convicted at the Old Bailey of using threatening words designed to stir up racial hatred. He distributed tapes in which he urged the murder of Jews and Hindus. The point I'm making is that our laws already cover the wrong that the government are trying to address here. Thirdly and finally, and there's a lot about this in the news at the present time, of course, it's also possible to use immigration controls on entry or re-entry of British nationals. And these will be upheld by the courts. In 2002, the Home Secretary excluded the controversial Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan because his projected speaking programme in the UK might result in racial or religious or ethnic tensions. The Court of Appeal upheld the exclusion that was made under the Immigration Act. So this is an unnecessary law. Existing offences already cover the problem of threatening freedom, without threatening freedom of religion and freedom of speech in the way that this offence will. Well, let me conclude. There is a threat to religious liberty here. There is a threat to free speech also. The law, as I've said, is unnecessary, both in view of recent legislation and also the court decisions which have already achieved the purpose that the government states it's setting out to achieve. Furthermore, as Daniel's explained to us very clearly, the experience of other countries, such as Australia, and mean that this will be a divisive law. It will increase, not diminish, religious controversy, and that controversy will be played out in the courts and also politically. Sadly, what's happened to Daniel Scott in Victoria could happen here next if this bill becomes law.